First, a new book looks at how we begin making judgments at a very early age. Both praise and blame can have a big impact on us throughout our lives. And our next guest says it can affect our friendships, our marriages, our jobs, and much more.
Joining us now to tell us more about praise and blame is Terry Apter. Terry is an author and psychologist, and she's with us to talk about her latest book, Passing Judgment, Praise and Blame in Everyday Life. Welcome to Central Time, Terry.
Well, I'm delighted to be talking to you.
So, Terry, what brought you to feel that these two concepts, praise and blame, were so key to our lives that you wanted to write a book about it?
Well, I've been working for decades on child development, looking how children develop within the family, family dynamics, and close relationships, with friends, with siblings. And I noticed that one of a very key repeated feature was whether one felt one was praised within the relationship or whether one felt one was blamed. And, in very close, intimate relationships, you often feel that somebody is going to accept you totally, and you talk about unconditional love. And the love itself and the attachment may be unconditional, but you also want to feel approved of. If a child feels that they're deficient, that they're not pleasing their parents, that their parents aren't finding things in them that are wonderful, they feel very threatened, very down. And so I really wanted to lift this theme of praise and blame and also put it in the context of how judgmental we are. We're constantly making judgments. And by judgments, I mean both positive and negative ones. So, praise, you're making a judgment as well as blame. This is your fault or you're somehow deficient. And once I started looking through that lens, I felt it was very helpful to pick that out and look at it in a range of phases in our lives, because our concern about how we're praised and whether we're praised and by whom, that changes according to how old we are and our context. I felt this was a very good way of picking out some of the dynamics that have often been missed in these important relationships.
So let's start, I guess, at the beginning, if it's something that it's kind of interwoven into our lives. Infants as young as 1 year old are already making judgments. I guess a two-parter. One, is that a surprise? And how do we know that?
Well, I think their early judgments are two-pronged. I mean, at first you get, the newborn baby is responsive to that loving, admiring curiosity of parents, and that's felt as praise. And we know that praise relaxes us. It opens us up to new things. It actually has a chemical impact on the brain. There are more of those endorphin compounds that make us feel good. And in that context, for a brand new baby, that actually helps the brain grow. It helps make new neuron connections. Now, what is indeed surprising is how, at what an early stage, children, babies make judgments of others. So you've asked, how do we know this? Well, one of several ways is you show an 11-month-old some puppets, and one puppet picks up a ball that is dropped and hands it to the person or the puppet who dropped it. Another puppet picks up a dropped ball and runs away with it. So this 11-month-old is looking at a skit or players or puppets where one is cooperative and the other isn't, doing something kind of antisocial. And that 11-month-old, by 11 to 12 months old, a child will not want to play with a puppet who is uncooperative, will not want to give that puppet treats, and will take treats away from the uncooperative puppet and give it to the cooperative ones. So there's a strong sense that even though that child, him or herself, isn't directly impacted by this cooperative versus antisocial behavior, they're making a judgment, they're having a view. And this is what we do all the time, every day. We're always making judgments about other people and our interactions with them. Are they safe? Are they trustworthy? Are they cooperative? Do they get me? Are they fun to be with? Do they understand me? Are they curious about me? Are they warm? All of these things are with us every day.
Well, it's really fascinating to hear you talk about sort of early judgment in children. I think we're frequently told, don't be so judgmental, but it sounds as though we can actually benefit a fair amount by even these early stages of learning about the world around us and helps us navigate it a little more. So moving from infants to children, as children get older, we will frequently use praise or potentially blame to teach lessons to children to help them move along. How have our ideas changed about praising children over the years?
Well, at one time, if you're looking quite a way back, say at the beginning of the last century, it was often thought that you shouldn't praise children because it would go to their head. They shouldn't think too much of themselves. They shouldn't expect too much. But more recently, it was then thought that you should feed children a steady diet of praise, that their environment should contain almost nothing but praise. You should praise them for turning up. You should tell them to praise themselves every day. You're wonderful. You're terrific. And it was thought that this was a way of protecting their self, of boosting their self-esteem. But more recently, and surprisingly, it was found that if you offer nothing but praise, and if that praise is diffuse, if it's unfocused, if it's for just about anything, that can be very confusing and even demotivating, because a child doesn't, children themselves tend to have very high standards for praise. If a child does just a scribble, you say, oh my goodness, that's genius, wonderful, it will be confusing, may be frustrating, because a child may be trying to do something very specific and sees that he or she is not, and I've seen children get very cross if they're praised for something that is, that isn't in sync with their aims. And this is an element of praise that I think stays with us. I mean, when I went into the workplace, women in particular were very sensitive to praise that might seem patronizing. It might indicate surprise that they could do something. It could also be very distracting. So if they went in to give a presentation and somebody said, nice shoes you're wearing, that could be unsettling, because it would change the focus from what they were trying to do and how they were trying to engage other people to something that was off message and possibly demeaning. So, praise is thought to be always good, but we can be very fussy about it, and it can make us very cross and very irritated.
We are talking to Terry Apter right now. She's a psychologist and author. Her latest book is Passing Judgment, Praise and Blame in Everyday Life.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1111. 1234. What kind of things do you praise others for? How does judging yourself and others affect your relationships? And how do you react to praise or blame? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We'll pick up that conversation after this short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we continue our conversation with Terry Apter about her new book, Passing Judgment, Praise and Blame in Everyday Life. We're talking about balancing praise and blame in your life and answering your questions at 800-642-1234.
Do you have questions about the best way to give praise as a parent? How judgmental are you and how does that affect your relationships? And was there a significant moment in your life that you were given praise or blame for something, and how did that affect you? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Now, Terry, before we went to the break, we were talking about how sometimes praise, especially if it's diffuse, can maybe throw people off of their game a little bit. You were specifically talking about women. So my question now is, how do men and women accept praise?
Well, there are a lot of myths about the way women versus men respond to praise. And it's often said that women are much more keen to please other people. In fact, what I found was that women were often, if they were being assessed formally, let's say in the workplace, they were very used to neutral or even negative comments. And they really liked praise if it was for something that had challenged them and something that they felt they'd done well on. But if it was for something that was sort of absolutely routine, then they would get pretty upset about it. Men loved praise, and they believed it fairly easily, but they would get very defensive if there was any little bit of blame. And in marriage, this is another thing where men and women's responses are different. Women are better and more adept at offering those little bits of praise and appreciation that can keep the relationship running smoothly. But if there's any sign of conflict and any implication of blame, men get stressed much more quickly, and this stress can be seen, in their physiological response, heart rate, blood pressure, perspiration, all of that can really go very high much more quickly than women. Women would be happier to talk about why are you blaming me? Why is it this? Why do you think this is my fault? Men get upset very, very quickly. And for that reason, they often shut down, or what's often called stonewalling. They'll turn into a stone wall. They won't respond. They'll leave the room. And this different physiological response to conflict, particularly blame and interpersonal relationships, underlies that very different response.
Now, Terry, I want to take a call really quickly. We have Mark in Wauwatosa who wants to chime in. Mark, what do you want to say?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I believe it was a study that was just recently released from the University of California, Berkeley, where they found that children that receive too much praise or unwarranted praise, it has a negative effect not only in childhood but also into their adult life. In that it has the same type of effect as like participation ribbons, where if everybody's receiving something, nobody really strives to do better. And it also then when those children grow up, they found that this was like a 20-year study. They found that the adults where they went from being overly praised as children don't necessarily like evaluate and accept praise or critique correctly because their perception of what is praiseworthy is so distorted from their childhood.
Mark, thank you so much for that call. So, Terry, we're hearing a couple of things that too much praise might completely skew our reactions as adults. Did you find that?
Well, yes. And indeed, those are solid findings in the field that children who have nothing but praise don't know how to evaluate criticism. If they get criticism, if they get any kind of criticism, they may say, I must be awful at this. I must not put myself again in this situation. I must avoid this at all costs. And it's much better to ensure that a child understands how to respond to what might seem like negative feedback. You know, you're not doing something right. Doesn't mean, shouldn't be alien to a child. A child, all of us, whenever we're trying something new, we have to accept that sometimes we're not going to do it well, and we may not see this ourselves, and we may need to be told by someone else. It might point it out, you're not doing this as it should be. And if that is alien to us, we won't be able to learn from it and absorb it and go forward. And, you know, if you're terrified of any kind of criticism or any kind of negative response because that just isn't something you're used to, then you're not going to learn. You're not going to learn that it's safe to apply yourself to try something and then fail, but then learn how to do it better. And those are the lessons that we may be depriving children of if we just feed them a steady diet of praise, if we give them a ribbon, a prize for just turning up.
Now, looking at the way that praise and blame plays out in relationships, I know that this was one of the topics that you covered in your book, particularly marriages, relationships. Obviously, no relationship is going to be without blame or praise, but is there, yeah, I guess, a magic number or ratio that can keep those relationships growing and but not too fraught?
Right. Well, especially in marriage, where the assumption is that you're going to be there for one another, you do admire one another, you know, even when there are down times and mess ups, the person is basically good. But there will be criticism and blame. You know, you're not loving me enough, you're not understanding me, you're not giving me what I want, you haven't mended the faucet, you know, whatever. There's lots of that. And having blame doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad marriage, but there has to be more praise than blame. As a matter of fact, blame is so negative, has such a negative impact, that you need at least five interchanges that involve praise before you can, in order to repair the damage that blame can do to a relationship. So you're bound to have it. You're bound to have blame and conflict, and the marriage can survive. But you need to have at least five times more interchanges that involve some kind of praise.
Now, in the last, say, minute that we have here, Terry, to pay attention to praise and blame throughout our lives and being able to discern the two and maybe not take praise too much or take blame too much. Do you have any tips as to how we can pay better attention to the subtleties between the two and maintain a balance there?
Well, first of all, I think we have to accept that we are judgmental beings. That's what our minds do, and this is how we navigate our interpersonal worlds. I think we have to realize how damaging, how painful blame is, and so we can manage that by focusing on it. I've talked about focus in praise, but we also have to focus on blame. What precisely is it that hasn't worked? Where precisely is the deficiency? Where is the accountability? And when you do that, you can put it in a context of you can learn from this and you can do better next time. I believe in a better future self. And then I think praise has to be in sync with the person's own goals and values. You have to always be curious about what a person is aiming for, what they value, and make sure the praise is not just routine and formulaic, but it actually addresses their values and their efforts and their goals.
Well, Terry, thank you so much for joining us today. This was great.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
That was Terry Apter. She is the author of Passing Judgment, Praise and Blame in Everyday Life. She's also a psychologist, and we've been looking at the way praise and blame as being sort of two sides of the judgment coin is basically with us from, our infancy to our adulthood. You can keep that conversation going at the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time.